And hello, everybody, and welcome to the Parish Council. This is episode 8. I'm Magnus Shaw, and I should mention it's the official podcast for the Rocking Vicar. Over there is Terence de Com.
Hello, Magnus.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I've been involved in a bit of an incident.
You do surprise me.
It's extraordinary. They follow me around. Now,
they do, yes. Or perhaps you follow them around, I think.
Actually, I think that's probably more likely.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not proud of this, okay? So, you know, I wouldn't encourage anybody to do what I did when I was in the car. Again, it's a car-related incident. Okay. And I was on the A40 just coming along by London's famous Hoover factory.
Yes.
And now... Everybody was only going at about 5 miles an hour, so this was a very sort of slow speed incident.
Oh, that's quite fast for London, isn't it?
Well, actually, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we were all getting a bit heady, you know, up to 5 miles an hour. Anyway, my phone rang. Now, one thing that I really am big on is not driving whilst on the mobile phone, i.e. holding it in my hand.
No, you mustn't.
So many people. Yeah, well, you know, it's illegal, Magnus.
It is indeed.
I don't see my doing that. But also, you know, I see so many people doing it. It is dangerous. So I said to my caller, hang on, I'll just plug the hands-free in. Yeah. The headphones, in other words.
Yeah.
Now, that was my disastrous error. And as I say, I'm not proud of this. And, I nobody should do this. But I looked down to shove the jack plug in the top of my phone. Bang! And I hit the car in front.
You see, you see what you did there? You did something more complicated than actually taking the call.
Oh, dear. Yeah. You see, I was trying to be law-abiding.
Yeah.
It all went terribly wrong. Now, I was expecting the reaction to be... It was a lady driving the car in front. Wasn't mm-hmm. It was quite a small car. Wasn't a new car. Just a sort of ordinary sort of runabout. And I was expecting a sort of, what the hell do you think you're doing?
Kind of reaction. Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, here we go. And these things, you know, if you ever been involved in a minor car smash, they always sound worse inside. You get this big sort of amplified bang.
Yeah.
God. But this lady driver simply calmly drove on. I don't think she even looked in the rearview mirror. She certainly didn't get out of the car with the sort of, oh, what the hell, you fool? Nothing like that. She just drove on. So I was perplexed by this because, you know, it's not the reaction one would expect after you've just scrunched the back of this lady. First of all, I would say I thought perhaps I didn't hit her. Perhaps the bang that I heard was, you know, my brakes.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
So I whammed on it. But when I got to my destination, I looked and I've on the front of my car, I've got a kind of bumper protector thing. It's
uh-huh.
like, and that had been like bashed in quite nicely.
Oh, okay. Me.
So I did hit it, and so I posed this on our best friend Twitter.
Yeah.
And I got some good suggestions about why the lady didn't stop. And we come. You were kind enough to give the sensible one, but I'll give the two main ones that. Scared me a little bit.
Okay.
To be honest. Answer number one came in. Perhaps she had a body in the boot. that would make you sort of not want to particularly linger for the police to come along and say, you know, what's going on here then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, it would, but that's quite a leap of imagination, isn't it?
I know, but I rather like that one.
Okay.
Though, it made me feel like I was in, you know, some sort of thriller.
Yeah.
You know, okay. Inspector Morse style on it.
A particularly short episode of Inspector Morse, the one where the woman with the body in the boot just drives off.
Yeah, that's it. Would be a very short. Somebody thought that perhaps she suspected that I'm a zombie, which again has got credibility if, you know, she happens to look on the internet. She knew, she thought, I know that face.
Yeah. Well, it's a possibility, I suppose. Another great leap of imagination, though.
But no, your answer was in fact the more sensible one, which was, do you know it? Can you remember what you said?
Yeah, I suggested that she was probably uninsured.
And when I discussed that with some chums, they said, "Yeah, that's it. That's got to be what it is." She didn't have insurance. She didn't want the hassle,
sure.
And so she thought, "I'll drive off." She changed lanes very quickly and went out of my sight line. So I thought that was even more of a reason. But you know. So there I go again.
Well, yeah, there you go again. Yeah, sort of a case of it's all over the front page. You're not giving me road rage.
Yeah, absolutely. Strange, because most people's reactions these days, I mean, even if you, you know, you sort of wave to let somebody in or something, they kind of give you a V sign back.
That's absolutely right. Yes. But just one question about this before we move on. Did your airbag go off?
Oh, thank God, no. Oh dear God, no. Yeah. And I funnily enough, because I was researching how to replace my bumper protector thing.
Yeah.
And I was obviously Googling and seeing if, you know, you can get these in salvage yards or whatever, or when you can buy them, you know, whatever. And so that obviously putting salvage RAV4 or whatever into Google brought up a whole range of things, which was people trying to sell cars that had been in sort of like these huge accidents.
Sure.
You know, and they said, still drivable, it said, you know, on eBay, you know.
Yeah.
But nearly all of them said, airbag deployed.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what can you do? You can't stuff it back in again, can you?
No, so have it reset, I suppose. Anyway, well, I'm glad nobody was harmed. That's the essential thing. And yeah, uninsured drivers, they're everywhere, apparently. And
But lucky for me, so I've got no claim against me, it seems.
Well, yeah, I guess that is lucky for you. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, in the annals of crime, that is barely registers, but... this particular story I've been following this week is actually rather curious and certainly potentially a major crime, and that is the attempted kidnap of Miss Joss Stone. Have you seen this?
Oh my goodness, yes I did. What a strange story to come out of the blue, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely bizarre set of circumstances. And obviously we are pleased that Miss Stone was unaffected and unhurt by it, and they got the villains. But the sort of subtext was perhaps even more extraordinary, and that was that the police feel she was perhaps targeted because Miss Joss Stone is worth £9 million.
Now, you're surprised at that, aren't you?
I'm astonished at that.
Do you know what I'm surprised it isn't even more. And, you know, I'm surprised it's only £9 million, and I shall tell you why.
Okay. I wish somebody would, because it was extraordinary, I thought.
Well, you know, I think we talked about Adele the other week and, you know, how her profile is high in America. Joss Stone, you know, probably has had more impact around the world than she has in Great Britain.
Okay.
She's had huge hits in America, but beyond that, her albums in particular have reached certainly the top 10, top 20, really right around every market in Europe, in Australia, and America, Canada, right around the world. Now, she clearly realized after the first or second album. The first or second albums were kind of known, and it kind of launched her, but she was still terribly young. It was the third album, which, again, rather oddly as for a third album, was called Introducing Joss Stone.
Right.
That's when she became, at minimum, a co-writer, if not the writer of all.
Yes.
Now, this, of course, is the key, because, you know, if you get the publishing rights and the songwriting rights, then, you know, that's where the money is. Now, even if, you know, she gets 50p a CD, which is, you know, very understating it massively.
Mm.
When you look at her, the numbers for what she's sold around the world, you know, that in its own would take her way beyond the 9 million mark. I just made it a few notes. I mean, she's had very few number one albums. Number one in Holland, but this is just a quick range of the countries: Austria, Belgium, Canada, France, Germany, Greece. Really wide range of countries: Ireland, Italy, Japan, New Zealand, Norway, Poland, Portugal, Sweden, Switzerland. She's had, you know, top 10 albums in all of these places, and they stay. They're not like going in for a week. Fans are buying them and then they drop out. These are long-staying successes.
So I guess there's two factors that explain this, then what one is, you've always got to look at the international markets, haven't you? And two, once you get your name on the songs, that's when you're coining it in, which is why Noel Gallagher is worth considerably more than his brother.
Exactly. Yeah. So why you often find, you know, you've got bands, particularly sort of these days now, like the punk era,
mm-hmm.
and you'll find, I tell you what, here's a classic case, but I contradict myself, after punk era, Spandau Ballet.
Yes.
For years, the people who weren't and aren't Gary Kemp
yes.
wanted to get themselves back together and get out on the road because, let's be honest, they needed the money.
Yeah.
You know, but Gary Kemp, of course, the man who's got all the publishing, he wrote all the songs,
yeah.
as famously decided in a court case. He didn't need to. You know, he's coining it in, you know, this rather large property in central London. Another case is The Jam. Paul Weller doesn't need to get The Jam back together because he wrote the songs and he's continued to write songs for his subsequent career.
Yeah.
You know, he's quids in, whereas the drummer and the bass player have had no such luck. In fact, the drummer, Rick Butler, you know, chops and changes, works in the music business, but then goes off and, you know, does, you know, sort of bricklaying and plastering and
extraordinary.
Things. So, you know, so there's a huge difference between being a part of an album or, you know, being the songwriter and then, as you say, getting the international market.
Yeah, well, the international markets are interesting, aren't they? Because bands who we would you know, deride for being spectacularly unsuccessful would laugh back in our faces. You think of a band like Shampoo, who were two sort of latter-day punkettes who had one hit in this country with Trouble.
Oh, right.
Which was a sort of a bounce around pop punk thing. And we would give them no credence whatsoever as successful recording artists are still enormous in Japan.
Well, there we are.
It's a huge market. Yeah, probably, you know, worth several million each. And we, you know, barely remember them. Equally, Pete Burns and Dead or Alive. Mm. And obviously, You Spin Me Round still gets a lot of radio play and appears in various different places. But that is nothing compared to how the Dead or Alive albums still sell in the Japanese market. So he's sitting pretty there. no pun intended, but really.
So that's why I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
In fact, my surprise is that she's not worth more.
No, I can see the reasoning now. Joss Stone, 9 million. And of course, we're very pleased that she came to no harm in that incident. And the fellas have been banged away in custody just this very day. So,
There was a kind of an amusing bit to this, if it can be amusing.
Sure.
Not, of course, the actual potential crime, which is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But that they were, you know, prowling about this kind of tiny little village in remote Devon. And I think they had some sort of like beaten up red Fiat or something. So it naturally, I think the locals said, yes, you know, we reported to the police. It stood out round here.
Yeah, they didn't think that through, did they? They needed to be in a Range Rover, didn't they?
They did, really.
Nobody would have given it a second glance. Well, thank goodness they weren't. So, okay, that's how Joss Stone came by her 9 million fortune. And by all accounts, appeared on the Sunday Times Rich List as well. So,
which of course is estimated, so it could be a lot more.
It absolutely could be a lot more. And so obviously her career continues. For what it's worth, I think she's nigh on terrible. But
oh dear, oh poor old Joss.
Yeah,
the Franklin influences.
I heard that in connection with this incident. I heard that.
Yeah.
Are You Digging on Me record, and that's it just reminded me how little regard I have for Joss Stone. But I'm glad she's fit and healthy anyway.
Now I've got something I need to ask you about.
Oh, good, yes.
I want your advice on something. Because
you're a fool to ask, but go ahead.
I was watching the television earlier in this week, and I think we've established before, I've asked you this before, you know, I never like to be patronising about the North, but you do have television up there. I'm sure you know, I've heard about
it. Yeah, it comes now, on once a week on a Saturday evening between 6 and 8, and usually consists of solemn music.
Now, I saw on this television program,
yes,
a man. It featured a man going into one of, you know, one of your I don't know where it was, whether Yorkshire, Lancashire. It's all the same, isn't it?
Right. I like the way you referred to it as your, like,
yeah, up your north,
all the northern counties are somehow associated with me.
Yeah, they're always all the same. One runs into another, I'm sure. He walked into this shop, which I chip shops, which I believe are very prevalent up there in the north.
They are the providers of our staple diet, of course.
So it appeared, because this man, there was a bit, though, that intrigued me to this transaction that I saw on the television earlier this week.
Okay.
He went into the chip shop and he asked for a portion of chips, and they were provided to him. And then
shock
he said, yes, no, here's the point
here's
of this.
The rub,
he
yes.
said, yes, where's the gravy? He
yes.
said, where's gravy? And that's the way he said it. I'm not being patronizing. He said gravy. And it took me a moment to realize, with your different language that you have, that he was saying gravy. And this lady behind the counter gave him this little, looked like a cardboard pot
yes.
of what I obviously then realized was gravy,
yes.
although he was saying gravy.
Yes.
And he poured it all over these chips. Mm. Now, my first question
is... I'm salivating now, yeah.
Oh, so now this is a standard... This is your sort of local dish in your parts. I just wanted to check because...
Chips and gravy is absolutely a much prized delicacy.
You're not just teasing me along here. That's true, is it?
Of course I'm not, no.
Okay. Now, do you do you serve this gravy with other dishes? So is it like a staple throughout the day? Does it come, I'll have my toast, where's my gravy? Or is it just merely a chip accompaniment?
Okay, well, the subtleties of the northern chip shop could keep us occupied for many a long hour, but I'll try and be brief. Every chip shop in this neck of the woods. Well, I live in Derbyshire, which is actually the Midlands.
Same thing.
Yeah, the East Midlands. But anywhere from here upwards would definitely have a large pot of gravy being kept warm.
Extraordinary.
And that would be applied to, certainly to chips. The guy was a little foolish because it sounds like he didn't order his gravy. at the time of placing an order for his chips, otherwise he wouldn't have had to inquire about its missing nature. If you ordered chips and gravy, which would be the sensible thing to do, if you desired the gravy, the chips would be in a tray.
Yes, they were. Yes.
Well, then the gravy would be ladled over the chips, and then the whole lot wrapped up.
This may have been a mildly upmarket chip shop, because he received it in a little pot, a little cardboard pot.
Yes. Well, you can ask for your gravy separately, and it would come in a polystyrene pot with a clip seal lid on the top.
Remarkable!
And now, but if you were having fish and chips, then you would be unlikely to go for the gravy. You would probably go for the mushy peas or the beans, maybe, but you probably wouldn't go for the gravy.
So there is a kind of a discrimination of which dish it would most suit, and it seems to be chips a la chips on their own.
Yeah, really. Chips on their own, or with a pie and chips,
pie and chips, you could have gravy.
Gravy, but probably not the fish. And
I
take it from your lofty observations on the nutritional requirements of the northern gentleman that... that you're not familiar with the concept of curry sauce.
No. Now you are. You're just tagging me along now.
No, of course the curry sauce. In a chip shop in the parts of the world that you're referring to, there's a range of dressings one can apply to one's chips, and gravy is just one of them. Curry sauce is not widely available and acknowledged to be just as much of a treat as the gravy, but it's not the sort of curry sauce you would have if you went to an Indian restaurant. This is something uniquely created for the fish and chip industry. It It has a sort of, it's a very light brown, a sort of a safari beige, you might call it.
Sounds a delight.
It almost glows. And in fact, if somebody is walking home from a hostelry and eating a tray of chips and curry sauce, then street lights become unnecessary because the curry sauce illuminates the larger proportion of the street. And it doesn't really have any content. There's no chicken or anything in it. It is just a gloop, a sort of irradiated gloop that has a vague hint of sort of mustardy curry about it. That is much liked, much enjoyed.
And this is smeared on the chips.
This is ladled over the chips. We don't do smearing. You know, that would suggest that somebody stood there with a knife and applying it to each individual chip, which would be a waste of time. It's ladled liberally over the chips before they're wrapped. And I have known people to have that with their fish, but that's a little outre.
Little outre, yes. the Mitford sisters wouldn't recognise this.
No, not at all. So there's the curry sauce. Then, of course, there's the beans, which are your standard Heinz 57 variety. That goes with, there you go, with almost anything. And the mushy peas, which you also don't have in the London. The best known anecdote about the mushy peas is when Peter Mandelson became MP for Hartlepool.
Oh yeah.
A few days after winning his seat, he went on a walking tour of the town with a film crew in tow, as you would expect from Mr. Mandelson. Yes. Yeah. And they went into a chip shop, much as you describe, with the white clean tiling and all the rest of it. And they said, oh, you know, local MP, da, 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 da. And they said, how about a magnificent haddock and chips? And he said, oh, that would be splendid. Splendid. They served it to him with the cameras running. They said, would you like anything else to go with it? And he pointed to the bubbling vat of mushy peas and said, I'll have a bit of that guacamole.
I could understand his mistake, I must say.
Priceless, thereby in one fell swoop removing him from the common man status that he was trying to acquire by walking around Hartlepool. But yeah, that's the kind of layout. Oh. And the Northern Chip Shop is a thing to behold. As you know, I've lived in London, lived there for 6 years, and my first night in London, which I believe was in the mid-80s, I was wandering around the locality, and it was actually the Old Kent Road, it was actually. And first thing I did was went into a pub. I thought, I'll have myself a little livener, and strolled up to the bar and in an assertive and confident voice, ordered a pint of mild.
Right. What the hell's that?
Yeah, what the hell's that? Exactly. Mild is it's a bit like a porter, if you know. Yes, like a porter. Served in every pub in the north of England and the Midlands, of course.
Oh, another northern thing, okay.
Barman said, I've no idea what he's talking about. Mild what? So either switched to a lager or a bitter. sunk that and thought, bit peckish now, went next door to the chip shop, asked for a bean mix.
Oh, what?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. So, well, a mix.
Yeah.
And this isn't true. This is more of a Midlands thing. A mix is chips with whatever you've said before mix.
Oh, so yeah, baked bean in your case.
Yes. So pea mix, gravy mix, bean mix.
They would have no idea. It would be like you were talking a foreign language.
Well, I said to him, well, no problem. Sorry, you've misunderstood me. What I require is... chips, he nodded.
Yeah. Yes.
And just add the beans to it.
Beans? In a chip shop?
What's beans, he said. So then I realised I had indeed moved to a foreign land where the culinary delights were a little disappointing. So,
Now, this is interesting because it highlights to me another issue that leads on from that. I think we are at one with you people up. Up there with breakfast. I think we both down here in the developed part. Yeah. We have breakfast and you have breakfast. Doesn't matter what it contains. As long as it's gravy. But
I don't know anybody who has gravy with their with good. Their breakfast,
no.
actually.
But that's fine. That would be a kind of 8 o'clock-ish kind of notion. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I think where we start to see the difference again is around the 1 o'clock period of the day,
yes.
when I would go away and pop out for a spot of luncheon.
Yes.
You wouldn't have that, would you?
Well, I certainly wouldn't have luncheon.
What's wrong with luncheon? That's what we have.
Yeah,
I do you have your dinner? Do you go on for your dinner?
I see what you're driving at now. No, yeah. I don't, actually. I don't.
Would refer to it as lunch?
I would refer to it as lunch, not flipping luncheon.
Okay.
Unless I was going to my club on St. James's, edge of St. James's Park, I would just...
Maybe that's where I would be going, for all we know.
There is no doubt in my mind that's exactly where you'd be going. But I suspect that the vast number of people in London would just be popping out for lunch. So I personally would have lunch. But
they do have dinner further up from you, don't they, at that
time?
Well,
no, they have dinner here in Derbyshire. How can I put this? It's a bit of a class thing more than a regional thing, to be honest. I think the working class man has his dinner at 1 o'clock. Yeah. I claim no superiority here. It's just I had a fairly classic middle class upbringing and was always referred to as lunch. But certainly, my grandfather, my mother's dad, would have had his dinner at 1 o'clock. Yeah, and he was a miner. Yeah, yeah.
Now it's gone out a little bit out of style down here. The thing that's gone out of style down here a little bit, but still it would be possible to attend, is afternoon tea.
Yes. Yes.
It would be about maybe 4 o'clock, something like that. But my next concern is, that the evening meal around 8 o'clock, mm-hmm. let us say.
Mm-hmm.
Now, only if Cook was presenting... what? Was presenting a formal meal for sort of guests and so
yes.
on. That would be dinner.
Yes.
And also, if we were going out for this meal at one of our many multi-starred restaurants down
yeah,
here.
Yes.
Then let's go out for dinner.
Mm.
But if it's just a kind of small scale, do it yourself, have it on your lap, watching The Apprentice.
Hold on. On Cook's night off, I'm guessing.
Well, yes. Well, what's wrong with that?
The notion that only you and Stephen Fry would recognise. Nobody else in the country would.
Really? Oh, okay. Well, anyway, if it's sort of on your lap in this informal notion, that would be referred to as supper. So it's dinner if you're going out or if Cook prepares it.
Yes.
But it's supper if it's just an informal... a tray on your lap situation.
Yes.
But
yeah,
I understand that, again, away from the throbbing metropolis, some of you might be having your tea.
Certainly,
I'm going home for my tea.
Yes. Yeah, I would be having my tea. Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
What I would like to develop at some time when I've clearly have too much time on my hands, is geographically work out where lunch becomes dinner,
yes.
and where dinner or supper becomes going home for my tea. My gravy.
Yeah, I would guess it would be wherever people. Wherever households stopped having a scullery maid, at that point, that might be the location you're looking for. Yeah,
it's as if you're making out I'm in some way unusual. It's disturbing.
In so many ways I can't begin to describe. I think the regions are very much denoted. By their foodstuffs, aren't they? A round piece of bread,
yes.
is called so many things, isn't it, around the country? Well,
it's a bread roll. It's a bread roll. What else could it be called?
A cob.
A cob?
It's a cob here, a bread cob. But it could also be a BAP.
A BAP, yes.
Yeah. And then, as you know, I do a lot of work in Manchester.
Yes.
I will be served with nothing but a disparaging look if I ask for anything other than a balm. There are people listening to this podcast in Lancashire,
yeah,
Greater Manchester, who have now put a price on your head for laughing at the word balm.
I'm so sorry,
which is a contraction of balm cake.
What do you do with your balm cakes? Don't tell me you put mushy peas and your gravy on it. Please don't.
Same as you do with your bread roll when served to you by the underbutler. The function is the same. It just has a different name. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That's astonishing. We'll have to come back to this with another time when I can compose myself.
Well, if you ever should be adventurous enough to call on us here at the Vicarage, which is in rural Derbyshire, we will be delighted to take you to a proper fish and chip shop, and you can try all these things yourself.
Well, it would be a treat. It would be an adventure, a treat, and an education.
I think that it would be all of those things, and you would laugh no more because you would say, this sure does taste good.
Listen, Magnus, have you got in your house a DAB radio, a DAB radio?
I have three.
Ah, now that's interesting. May I ask you what you do with them? What do you listen to on your three DAB radios?
No, I just ladle gravy on them.
We'll never get through this.
I didn't realise you could listen to things on it. Wouldn't that require some kind of electrical power? only the chip shop has electricity.
You've got a wind up generator there.
Yeah.
Power, your water mill fired DAB radios. Oh dear.
Here's what I listen to on my DAB radios.
Okay.
A range of stations. I listen to Six Music on occasions. I listen to Five Live in the bedroom at night. And I listen to the station I've started to listen to is called Absolute 90s, which is run by the Absolute Radio people. And it is back-to-back 90s, mainly indie music, with the odd jingle and no presenters. And that's terrific for the bath, that one is. Yeah.
Now, you see, I think I'm going to kind of agree with you on the listening in a moment, but I think nobody wants DAB and nobody needs it. And I think it's already, a forgotten concept. Now, having said that, I'll contradict myself by saying I too have three DAB radios. Do we say DAB or DAB? I'm never sure.
I think equally acceptable both of those, yeah.
I think I'll say DAB because it's quicker to say than D, studio, full stop, A, full stop, B.
Yeah.
Right, so I've got three DAB radios, one in the bedroom, same reason as you, to listen to Five Live, one in the bathroom and one in the kitchen, and they are all so that I can hear Five Live away from fluttery medium wave.
Right, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That is the only reason that I have DAB radio, right? And on a personal level, I don't have any time for 10 variants of absolute 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s. But what I have noticed with DAB, again, against the original concept, we were told, this is a super enhanced form beyond FM. It's like CD quality coming out of your radio and all that goes with it.
Uh-huh.
The reality here, certainly, and as I'm close to the metropolis, the quality is terrible. The bit rates, of course, are way below the original concept, and it's a nightmare in a car. You can't get it in a car.
Yeah.
But my main point about why I think it's going to fail is that life and technology have moved on, because I can, for example, in my car, I suppose, when I'm not crashing into people, I can listen to a couple of stations that I would listen to from America, MVY from Martha's Vineyard, or my favourite, KTYD 99.9, Quality Rock, from Santa Barbara.
And you're, how are you receiving these?
On my iPhone.
Okay.
And it, you know, I got a, again, when I'm looking down and plugging it in and crashing into people, I've got this device that, you know, feeds it wirelessly through the stereo in the car. So if I wanted to, I mean, that's just if I'm not listening to a podcast or something. I find British music radio unlistenable. So I, you know, I listen to these because it feels a bit exotic, to be honest with you. I'm driving down the M4 and I'm listening to these geezers coming from Santa Barbara in California talking about the surf and the sunshine. I think, oh, this is pretty good.
Yeah, sure.
But the point is, I could now listen to a wide range of, well, the full range of really English, British broadcasting through cable TV, satellite TV, Freeview, internet. Why do I need a DAB radio, you know, to listen to any of those? I've got it everywhere else already. Why would I want to have lower quality on a transistor?
It's interesting that you should say that, because a lot of people who I speak to about DAB report the same thing, that the quality is very poor, the reception breaks up, you don't get the range of stations you've been promised. We must be unique here in Derbyshire, because we get an enormous range of DAB radio stations and all of them are superb quality.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's really odd. It's really odd. And my dear mother lives not 10 miles from me, and she has given up on DAB because she just can't find what she's looking for, and the reception is intermittent and all the rest of it. But here where I am, it's terrific. It's absolutely, you know, there's no argument against it. It gives you a wider range of radio stations in very good, clear quality. But I would be the first to dismiss it if it didn't give me that. Why have they failed so spectacularly to offer that nationwide then?
Oh, well, it's cost, isn't it? And the width of bandwidth needed to get the stuff up over in any sort of quality. They narrowed it right down so that they can squeeze even more in. Mm. And in doing so, you know, it's offering very poor bit rates of transmission. Just not what the original design was at all. And I also think, as we've discussed before, so we don't need to particularly go down this road again, but I just think people's attitude to music has changed spectacularly. I don't think there's a future for music radio at all. There will be a market for personality-led radio that has an element of music to it, but the music is almost secondary, as is proven already, probably with, say, probably Chris Evans, certainly with Moyles, certainly with many of the breakfast shows. The music may be there, but it's to break up the kind of speech and the personality of the presenter.
Yeah, and in lots of cases, doesn't do so with sufficient frequency. I think that Moyles plays 6 records an hour or something.
It's not a music program, is it? No. And of course, you know, now as well, and increasingly so with, you know, we've already got Spotify where, you know, I listen to it because I subscribe to it. You know, I've got no adverts, so I can just basically pick my own playlist from the entire, you know, recorded history of music, with a few exceptions, of course. And now that Spotify allows you now to play your own local tracks, if you like, the stuff that you've got stored on your hard drive.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of software now as well that will allow you on an iPhone, for example, to out and about, you can play stuff off your hard drive from home as a sort of remote device.
Yes.
You know, I see that blooming, and therefore, you know, some fellow, you know, saying, you know, well, 20 minutes past 4 in big Swindon FM, and, you know, coming up next is, you know, the latest from so-and-so. I don't want the latest from so-and-so. I want now, with the sophisticated choices that we have, I want to be able to pick my own what's coming up next. Mm. I don't want some bloke from Swindon or, you know, Smooth FM or Magic or whatever choosing it for me.
I think there's, for me, there's some kind of attitudinal difference between listening to a radio station that's playing me music and selecting the music for myself. And sometimes I quite like not knowing what is coming next, provided the presenter is informative, entertaining, intelligent, and not Chris Moyles. Then I quite like not knowing what the next piece of music is, because
that means you've got to trust the presenter or trust the station, like your Absolute 90s.
Yes.
You've got to trust them that they're sort of, if you like, tuned into you and you're tuned into them. But if you haven't got that trust,
yeah, sure,
you know, then you could have any old thing coming up that, you know, you would never really want to listen to again.
No, that is true, but I think there's just an experiential difference for me between choosing to listen to a radio station and choosing some music to listen to. It feels completely different for me, and both have their places and times for me. And so I wouldn't be quite so keen to sound the death knell of radio for that very reason. I think there's an experiential difference, but I think radio's up against it for the reasons you outline. But I definitely think it still has a place as a music medium, but it's got to tread very carefully as to how it delivers that. And none of what you've said should put anybody off from listening to my show on a Saturday.
Indeed not.
The internet radio station Trent Sound. And my show has shifted slightly from when we last spoke about it. It's now 1 till 5 on a Saturday afternoon, and I hope I can dismiss your fears for the quality,
yes,
of presenter-led radio. It is playlisted, so I will apologise in advance if the tunes upset you. But I'm going to give radio one last shot by inserting myself into it and trying to make it something of worth. But you raise a good point, and certainly just in the same way that PVRs and the Sky Pluses of this world are challenging the whole notion of scheduled television, then iPods and iPhones and Spotify and all the rest of them are challenging the whole notion of scheduled radio. But I think we'll probably see that TV and radio find a way of rubbing up alongside those other platforms. I can't see either of them fading away, but they have to adapt, certainly.
Oh, now speaking of that, you know, this week, I'll just swiftly mention before we move on, of course, this week has seen the report by John Myers, who's chief executive of the Radio Academy, succeeded Trevor Dann.
Yeah.
And he was, I suspect now perhaps Tim Davey is kind of regretting it, but Tim Davey from the BBC invited John Myers in to come and do a review of how essentially Radio 1 and Radio 2 is doing. And I don't think they really expected, they probably expected a little bit more BBC-friendly outcome.
Okay.
Not that, you know, he's in any way been disrespectful, but he has reported, there's a couple of real key headline issues that has come out of this report. It hasn't all sort of emerged out yet, but the headline points of John Myers' review led to a couple of breathtaking notions. And one is, I don't know if you've seen this, but Radio 1 Newsbeat, which actually broadcasts a 15-minute bulletin twice a day,
yes,
and 90 seconds hourly updates.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, they also do the news for Radio 1 Extra. Now, they employ 52 full-time staff to produce those two 15-minute bulletins and the 90-second hourly updates. 52 full-time staff working on Newsbeat.
That does seem remarkable. I guess this is the kind of profligacy you get with a public service broadcaster, isn't it? I think they're at liberty to do that because their payroll is guaranteed at the end of the month, isn't it?
I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. Now, I don't want the BBC to become a commercial organisation. It's nice that it's independent, it's funded by us all in a sense, and it therefore doesn't have that advert-driven or commercial-driven remit. But what I do want it run on is to be administered and managed on commercial lines, because if you don't do that, then it's just as possible for Rob McKenzie of Newsbeat to say to whoever his boss is, whether Tim Davey or whoever, to say, well, actually, If we had 104 full-time staff, I could make it even better.
Yeah, sure.
It'd be it'd be doubly good.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is from here in, madness lies, because, you know, how do they pay for it? Well, they pay for it by selling off Television Centre, or, you know, continually poking to get the licence fee raised. The other, you know, so it just isn't run on the managerial lines that would exist anywhere outside a public body such as Radio 1 and Radio 2.
Absolutely not. You make an unarguable point there that you do not need 52 full-time staff to produce a 15-minute news bulletin.
I know we need to move on, but I just want to mention one other extraordinarily bizarre aspect of life on Radio 2, which I certainly didn't know. I don't know if you did. But Radio 2 employs newsreaders who come on and read a brief hourly news update.
Yes.
They don't write that bulletin. They actually have to be recharged in BBC's own internal madness. So they're charging themselves internally. That is actually produced elsewhere, and they just employ newsreaders simply to read that brief hourly news update. And John Myers reported, and I quote, did little else until the next hour's bulletin. Yeah. So they're not deployed doing any other duties. They just wait for the next hour's bulletin.
No, absolutely right. I did know that, and it's always been a puzzlement to me. The reason I do know that is that they mostly employ former actors to anchor their news. They don't tend to employ journalists to anchor their news. They just tend to employ the voice. But again, this is what you will get if you have the luxury of that, which the BBC inevitably do. On the subject that you raised of selling off TV Centre, I've written a piece for the Rocking Vicar this very week on that subject, and you probably won't like what I've written, but please do have a read, and anybody listening to the podcast would be very welcome to have a look too. So, yeah, interesting stuff, and the challenging times for the BBC as well. Last week on the podcast, we did a little feature, which was called Advice for Pop Stars. It was an opportunity to go back in time and give pop stars the benefit of our experience and wisdom. And we had a bit of fun with it. So perhaps we'll do a few more of those. Do you have anything on those lines, Terence?
I was made aware by the huge production team that I should do so, and yes. So I do, yes.
Yes, the 52 staff.
The 52 staff, yes.
Employed to produce the Rocking Vicar podcast, yes.
Yeah, yep. Wait till John Myers gets hold of the Rocking Vicar.
Then there'll be trouble.
Phil Spector.
Yes.
I've got some retrospective advice for Phil Spector. This is advice for 1962, but it will hold him. I will have to travel back in time to give him this advice, but it will hold him in good stead for the rest of his professional and personal life.
Yeah.
Get yourself on an anger management course.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, and I thought Arthur Brown of Crazy World fame invested a fire extinguisher.
Oh dear, yes, again, what was that, 1968, and I imagine if he's still with us, he's probably still doing the rounds with his
he fronts Hawkwind these days.
Does he really?
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And including the fire, and does he do his hit, I wonder, probably.
Oh, I would hope so, yes, yeah. Last time I saw Hawkwind, he wasn't there, but such is the nature of Hawkwind, it's a rather flexible
crew.
Yeah, that's not
unusual, but, no. Yeah. John Lennon, 1969.
Yes.
Grab those Let It Be tapes back from Phil Spector and give them to George Martin.
Yes.
A life of pain for Sir Paul McCartney could have been saved by that simple measure.
Yeah, that is good advice. I thought Dennis Wilson should maybe pop into that little beachside shop and get some water wings.
There's a really dark element to many of your advice.
They're all along those lines, yes.
Elton John.
Yes.
Elton, where did the American South accent come from?
Yes, yeah, that's a really good point, actually. I've heard it raised before, and I've heard it's being put to Sir Elton in an interview.
What did he say?
Well, he was completely flummoxed.
He didn't realise.
He couldn't see it. He couldn't see it at all. The question was, why do you always sing as if you're from the Deep South?
And Elton.
It just floored him.
Elton, you're from Pinner in Middlesex, not Atlanta, Georgia.
No, and you're called Reg. So, yes. But he seemed to be oblivious to the fact that he sang as if he was from Tennessee. So, and quite genuinely flummoxed by that, I think. So, but good, yes, good question. Where does that come from? Mm. Yeah. So I have a little gift I want to take back in time. I want to go back in time with my gift. I want to go back to Dublin about 10 years ago. And I want to give my gifts to the young fellows from Westlife. My gift, 5 cyanide capsules.
Yours are really grim and from the dark side, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Katie Price, you know, close to all our hearts.
Yes.
Find a nice, suitable man with whom you can settle down.
Like that's going to happen.
Pete Doherty or Liam Gallagher spring to mind.
Yes, indeed. Now, that would be an interesting mix, yes, yeah. Especially as Liam's married, yes, yeah. Yeah. So a spot of advice for Madonna. I would like to go back to maybe 1993 and just drop into a dressing room for 30 seconds to give me sufficient time to say, put them away, love.
Yes. Very wise, very wise and sage advice. My last one is travelling further back in time to Pablo Picasso.
Yes.
And I want to say, look, how can I put this? Actually, mate, no one wants to tell you, but nobody actually looks like that.
Yes. The trouble is you probably march into his studio full of vim and vigour to announce that. Find him sitting with 6 guys with big cubic heads.
Yeah.
Drinking coffee and smoking Gauloises. Oh, no! But possibly not. And I would just like to pop back a couple of years, drop round on Sting and Trudy and accidentally stand on the mandolin.
I think Trudy would probably be delighted.
Yeah. So there we go. Yeah, more advice for pop stars. I'm sure there's more to come as well. If anybody who listens to the podcast has erstwhile advice for pop stars, then please do let us have them by the usual routes. You can go on the Rocking Vicar website. There's a contact page there. Or you can follow us on Twitter and send us a tweet, and it'll doubtless appear in the podcast. Anything you would like to add before we toddle off?
We're right out of time. We're over time again.
Oh, we're over time again. Oh, such as well. That's because we don't have 52 producers.
No.
Watching the clock for us. So well, as we're over time, it just remains for me to thank anybody and everybody who listens to this or any other the other podcasts that are available through the Rocking Vicar website. Should just mention this week on the site, we've got a nice piece from you. We've got me waxing lyrical about the sale of TV Centre, and we've also got some band album covers that you can click on, enlarge and marvel at. But that's it. We are out of time, as Terence rightly says. Thank you, sir. Thank you for your time. Very kind.
Thank you, Magnus. Hi, everybody.
We love you. We love you. And we will see you in 7 days. That has been the Parish Council. Bye-bye.